Hello, everybody. Just before we start, if you listen to the end of last week's episode where we start talking about what we have coming up, you would have heard that there was a different movie planned for this week. Unfortunately, life happened and things came up and we were not able to schedule the recording as planned with Aaron co-hosting and Colin as our guest for the movie Final Destination. However, being crafty lads that we are, Colin and I had a contingency plan in place, and so we had a backup episode in the can, ready to go, and so here we are in place of the Final Destination episode. I hope you enjoy.
The date is March 30th, 1988, and we're watching Beetlejuice. Beetlejuice! Beetlejuice! Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
Welcome to I Used to Like This One, the show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past the nostalgia to see if they still hold up. My name is Sean Wells, and with me, as always, is the tally man to my bananas.
6 foot, 7 foot, 8 foot, punch!
I've been singing that all day. Hello, everybody. I'm Colin Stewart.
Oh, boy. Yeah, you can't help but do it. I never even realized until this viewing just how much Harry Belafonte is in this movie. I really only ever thought it was the two songs, but it's like, oh, no. It's constantly Harry Belafonte. Well, this week we're looking back at March 1988 when the movies in theaters were Biloxi Blues, Johnny B. Goode, Police Academy 5, Assignment Miami Beach, DOA, and of course, our movie for today, Beetlejuice, which earned $74.7 million on a $15 million budget. Respectable. Not too shabby.
Well, I mean, clearly there was nothing else to watch in theaters. I've never heard of any of those other movies. But maybe that's just me. I don't know.
Well, Biloxi Blues is Matthew Broderick. Johnny B. Goode is Anthony Michael Hall. And, I mean, you know Police Academy 5, even if you haven't seen it.
I guess. Sure. Yeah.
And DOA is from our pal Dennis Quaid that we always say meh about whenever Dennis Quaid pops up in a conversation. But, you know, he's got like 24 hours to live because he's injected with poison or some shit. It's some sort of thriller. I think Meg Ryan's in it as well.
Yeah. All right. Well, there will be spoilers ahead. So if you don't want this movie to be spoiled for you, then please hit pause, go watch the movie and come back and hear what we have to say.
I just find it interesting that I knew all those movies. I didn't have to like pull up any IMDb when I was saying all that. It's like, I've actually seen all those movies. DOA has been one that I've been kicking around to get on here. But don't worry, Police Academy 5, I don't think ever will be a suggestion of mine.
Where does like the bottom fall out on Police Academy? 4? 3?
Four is kind of the last one. Yeah, four.
And there's seven total?
Yes, there's seven.
Okay.
Six is City Under Siege, and then seven is Mission to Moscow. Yeah, I think that's how it goes. So anyway, here we go. I have five taglines for you this week, Colin. Okay, here we go. First tagline, say it once, say it twice, but we dare you to say it three times.
Nice. My guess, if you had asked me beforehand to guess what one of them would have been, would have been say his name.
Yeah. Well, do you have any other guests? Because, you know, you might be able to get at least one.
Is there a Harry Belafonte reference?
No.
Something about him being a party.
Well, the name and laughter from the hereafter. How about that one for you?
Oh, I like that one. That's like a rustling old school WWE moniker, like the Mouth of the South, Jimmy Hart.
I am the name in laughter from the hereafter.
Yeah, he could have been like the manager of The Undertaker or something like that.
Oh, yeah, there you go. Well, you know who could be The Undertaker? Number three, this is what I thought you would get. He's the ghost with the most.
Yeah.
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 But there's the same Undertaker manager right there. Well, number four, he's guaranteed to put some life in your afterlife.
Okay, sure.
And finally, in this house, if you've seen one ghost, you haven't seen them all.
That one could have used another pass, I think.
Yeah. Well, you know, when I organized them to actually deliver them to you, I did have the name in laughter from the hereafter bringing us home. So I had tried to bring it home strong, but, you know, we mixed it up there. So
dang. Show it with your instincts.
Yeah, I guess so. But here we go. We don't know much about this movie yet, so let's ask Colin for a 60-second synopsis.
Alrighty. After Barbara and Adam Maitland die in a car accident, they find themselves back in their house, which they are unable to leave, and with only a handbook to guide them through the ins and outs of the afterlife. The Maitland's house is eventually sold to Charles and Delia Dietz. While Charles has come to the country in search of rest and relaxation, Delia, an aspiring artist, immediately sets about inflicting her artistic eye on the house, much to the chagrin of Barbara and Adam. Barbara and Adam decide to try their hand at haunting and attempt to scare the Dietzes away, but they suck at it and instead end up befriending the Dietzes' daughter, Lydia. Realizing they are out of their depth and in spite of recommendations from their case manager, the Maitlands hire a bio-exorcist named Beetlejuice to get the job done and immediately regret their decision. The Dietzes then try to summon Barbara and Adam in order to show them off to Charles' boss, but things go wrong and Lydia is forced to summon Beetlejuice to save them, but he will only help her on the condition that she marries him, enabling him to freely cause chaos in the mortal world. Beetlejuice saves the Maitlands and then prepares a wedding before a ghostly minister. The Maitlands intervene before the ceremony is completed, with Barbara riding a sandworm through the house to devour Beetlejuice. Finally, the Dietzes and the Maitlands agree to live in harmony within the house while Beetlejuice is stuck in the afterlife waiting room. There you go.
Nice. So I thought back to the first time that I saw Beetlejuice, and I could not remember it. I do not have any kind of story for how Beetlejuice came into my life. I cannot remember my story, but it's just always been there. One day I had seen it. I don't remember when that day was.
One day it just appeared in your eyeballs.
That's right. So this is one where I don't have any fond nostalgic story of, oh, I remember this was the one that I couldn't wait for. It was cool. I think I saw it in theaters, actually. I may have. I would have been 10. I'm not sure. But whatever. I've always liked Beetlejuice. It's always been one of those ones that I just know. And I like. And there we go. And it was funny because Beetlejuice is one of those ones that I didn't realize until later that it was Alec Baldwin in the movie. I don't know why, for some reason, Alec Baldwin is, anytime I saw him older, I just never associate him with this version of Alec Baldwin. He doesn't look as much like Alec Baldwin to me. So I remember that is one weird story that I have with this movie, that it took me a long time to make the connection with Alec Baldwin from other Alec Baldwin stuff that I had seen to this movie.
Hmm.
Yeah. So there we go. That's my history of the Beetlejuice. Colin, what about you?
Yeah, I'd never seen... Well, okay. I've seen bits and pieces of this movie throughout my life, but I've never watched it the whole way through and got the like full story of what this movie is about until I watched it for this show. But like obviously, like I remember the like Deo scene and the like dancing and Lydia at the end and all that, and like I've seen clips of like Michael Keaton as Beetlejuice, but But I, like, have very fond memories of Beetlejuice from being a kid because I really loved the cartoon that was
mention the cartoon? Oh, yeah. My God. I loved the cartoon. Yeah.
Yeah, that was a favorite cartoon of mine. And Beetlejuice is also one of those, like, properties, I guess, that I really remember the action figures. Like, yeah. I remember they had, like, those ones where you'd, like, they'd have, like, plastic heads over, like, weird monster heads and that kind of stuff. And, like, you could squeeze the legs and the eyes would pop out and do different things like that. And so, yeah, I definitely, like, I have fond, good memories of Beetlejuice from my childhood, but they were not linked to the movie. It's more so from the cartoon.
Okay. Now, let me say that you just jogged my memory because, oh my God, how did I forget to mention the cartoon? Because, yes, I absolutely loved the cartoon, and that makes me realize that I know I saw this in theaters because I saw this movie before the cartoon, and the cartoon existed after the movie came out.
Yeah.
So I do at least know that, because I'm pretty sure it was out. The cartoon existed by the time this was on video, so that's why I'm sure I saw it in theaters.
Well, I was going to say, I would have been 2 years old when this movie came out, and I remember the cartoon from, like, when I was around 4 or 5. So it would have been, like, 1990, 1991, I'm guessing.
Okay. All right, well, here we go. Let's jump into Beetlejuice, directed by Tim Burton. Wes Craven was who they originally wanted to direct this, though. Wes fucking Craven.
I feel like it would have leaned more into the horror and less into the comedy.
Pretty sure.
If you think about it, Freddy Krueger is not far off from Beetlejuice.
That's true. He's a sinister Beetlejuice.
Especially, like, the Beetlejuice from the cartoon. Like, the little bit that I remember of the cartoon is, like, cartoon Beetlejuice. There was a lot more, like Lydia being taken into the ghost world and, like, dream world, and he was, like, kind of, like, would appear in her nightmares and stuff. Like,
yeah,
I feel like in the cartoon he was more Krueger-esque.
Well, and in a way, I mean, just like all the 80s cartoons back then, he was, like, Slimer. He was someone that was actually more of a protagonist than he is in the actual movie.
Yeah,
like in the movie, you don't want to hang out with Beetlejuice.
Well, he's also not, like, it's weird. For a movie named Beetlejuice, he's not in it as much as I would think.
14 like, and a half minutes.
He doesn't factor into it as much. I don't know,
he's in 14 like, and a half minutes of this movie. I mean,
yeah, that makes sense.
Well, produced by Michael Bender, Richard Hashimoto, and Larry Wilson, and written by Michael McDowell, Larry Wilson, and Warren Scarron. This movie apparently was the first DVD that was ever sent out by Netflix in 1998.
Oh, really?
Was Beetlejuice, yeah.
Was it something to do with, like, the 10-year anniversary, or... They're just like, we need to get this going.
No, I think it was just the first one ordered.
Oh.
Yeah. Well. There's the person sitting at home was just itching to see Beetlejuice. They're like, well, I'm going to try this Netflix thing. Why not? Cool. Yeah. So we open the movie with, like, all the Danny Elfman you can handle, and you get the overhead view of a small town nestled in the forest, and then it transitions to a model of the same town because Danny Elfman, I mean... You know, it's not the same kind of model work that he usually does, but, you know, it's still his thing. Gotta have models if you're Danny, if you're a Tim Burton movie. Why am I saying Danny Elfman? Yeah, still have to have models if you're a Tim Burton movie, I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it would be pretty cool to have, like, a full-scale version of your own town in your attic. I don't really know what you would do with that all the time. Like, do they... Do you think he, like, takes it through the seasons and, like, in the winter he puts snow on it and stuff and, like...
Well, yeah, I mean, like there is the point when he's setting up the flowers on his own grave. Yeah. It's like, is he going to leave that there forever, or is he going to take the flowers away when they die?
Yeah.
I'm the kind of guy that has always wanted to have his own railroad set. You know, one of the ones with the mountain and everything like that.
The Sheldon Cooper.
I'm not rich enough to have a train room.
No, I know. Like at least once a year, the like Model Train Society of Edmonton sets up shop in Bonnie Doon Mall. And I've happened to come across it a couple times.
Oh, it's not once a year. It's 3 days a week.
Oh, it is pretty cool.
Yeah.
But you're right. Like, the minute I saw Alec Baldwin on screen, I just thought to myself, that's Alec Baldwin? Like, mm-hmm. I don't think my mind can conceptualize Alec Baldwin pre-30 Rock.
Yeah.
Like I feel like he started playing Jack, and then his character and his personality just melded, and he's just been that guy henceforth. Like,
it's kind of like, well, and physically it's kind of like Mandy Patinkin, where mm-hmm. in Princess Bride he is unrecognizable to anything else I've ever seen Mandy Patinkin in, because after Princess Bride he always looked that way. That's how he looks now. You know, his whatever it was, criminal, whichever criminal show he was on. It wasn't CSI, but it was one of those ones. Criminal Minds.
Criminal Minds. Dude.
Yeah, he was on the first couple seasons of that. Dead Like Me, he was on that.
Yeah, but I was thinking that I remember reading or listening to, like, I think maybe it was even a Kevin Smith podcast where they were talking about the casting for Tim Burton's Batman.
Yeah.
And prior to Michael Keaton, the fan consensus was that everybody should have hired Alec Baldwin.
Oh my!
And I remember, and when I was listening to it, I remember thinking like, Alec Baldwin, like I can't even, like I get it. Back then, you couldn't conceptualize Michael Keaton either. But like present day, I was kind of like, I can't visualize Alec Baldwin in that role. But seeing him in 1988, I could see him as Bruce Wayne.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Someone they wanted for Adam, possible alternate casting, was Bill Pullman.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's a president from Independence Day, the same look, sort of, you know. Yeah. Well, let's talk about the rest of the cast here. I mean, we're already talking about Alec Baldwin, but
I think to shoot back to Liar Liar and Princess Bride, Cary Elwes could have been a good Adam.
He could have been. Yeah. True.
All right, so we've covered Alec Baldwin. We have Gina Davis as Barbara Maitland.
They considered Linda Blair. The only thing I know Linda Blair from is The Exorcist. She's.
I was thinking of Selma Blair.
But oh, okay. Yeah.
Michael Keaton as Betelgeuse, or Beetlejuice. It was weird to me to see that spelling with the like, I don't know, it looks German or Dutch or something.
That's how the constellation is spelled.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. When it comes to the Beetlejuice constellation, apparently Tim Burton wanted Sammy Davis Jr. as Beetlejuice. And then here's the list for you for Beetlejuice alternate castings: Dustin Hoffman, Robin Williams, of course, Christopher Lloyd, Jim Carrey, of course, Tim Curry, Jack Nicholson, Bill Murray, of course, Robert De Niro, Dudley Moore, John Cleese, and, well, God damn it, they wanted Schwarzenegger for the role as well. They considered Schwarzenegger.
I mean, I can't, I would say of all those listed, I cannot see Schwarzenegger or De Niro playing that role.
Yeah. Yeah, not De Niro. True.
Everyone else, I think I could see it happening, even Dustin Hoffman.
Yeah, I suppose so.
I think Jack Nicholson would have been very interesting.
And then, you know, the whole idea of Jack Nicholson and him being in the next year's movie together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we have Jeffrey Jones as Charles Dietz. I know his face, but I don't know where he's from.
He's the principal.
Principal. Got it. Yeah, okay. That makes sense now.
Yeah.
My first love, Catherine O'Hara, is Delia Dietz.
Yeah. Apparently, Angelica Houston was a possibility, but she got ill. And so they brought in Catherine O'Hara. Yeah.
Man, I just love her. Like, I don't know. I was sold on this movie the minute I saw her.
Catherine O'Hara, of course. Canada's sweetheart.
Right? She's so funny.
Yeah.
Moira shit. She's so funny. Winona Ryder is Lydia Deetz. How old is Winona Ryder in this movie?
70-ish. We have to do some math. We have to do some math, right? What's her birth year?
1971.
So she's 52 right now. She was 17.
17, yeah.
Yeah. Why am I going the long way around for this math problem? Yeah. Apparently, it came down to her and Alyssa Milano in the finals. That's who they had it down to and chose Winona Ryder. But other people that auditioned, Juliette Lewis, Lori Loughlin, Aunt Becky, Diane Lane, Sarah Jessica Parker, Brooke Shields, Justine Bateman, Molly Ringwald, and Jennifer Connelly. Our crush on this show, Jennifer Connelly.
This movie could have used more Jennifer Connelly.
It could have. And riding a horse.
Don't get me. I don't want that in my mind. who's Juno? Sylvia Sidney is Juno. Oh, that's like the boss and his wife.
Yeah.
Sylvia Sidney is Juno. Robert Goulet is Maxie Dean.
Yeah, Maxie Dean.
Dick Cavett is Bernard. Glenn Faddix is Ortho.
Yeah, Ortho. Apparently, John Candy, John Goodman, and Bob Hoskins were all alternate castings. John Goodman would have been so much fun. But, I mean, you know, anytime John Goodman's in something, it's going to elevate it.
Oh, man. That guy, he had a sad ending.
Who did?
Glenn Faddix. He died in 2010 after he got surgery to fix a broken ankle, and then was at his home and fell in the kitchen and hit his head and died.
Holy shit.
He was also the voice of the mayor in Nightmare Before Christmas.
Oh, yeah.
We should watch that movie. Marie Cheatham is Sarah Dean. Tony Cox is the preacher. Tony Cox is the preacher, but Jack Angel is the voice of the preacher. That's interesting.
Well, I mean, I know Tony Cox from things like Bad Santa and stuff, and yeah, he
doesn't have that deep preacher voice that they had in this movie. You know that he's
got a high pitched voice.
Mm-hmm. Adele Lutz is Beryl. Annie McEnroe is Jane Butterfield, and Patricia Martinez is Miss Argentina, the afterlife receptionist.
I think we've kind of run out of main cast at this point. Yeah, so our heroes, Barbara and Adam, it is interesting that four of the main characters are all alphabetical in this movie, because we've got Adam, Barbara, Charles, and Delia. The four main characters are all A, B, C, and D.
Yeah.
What's up with that? That's weird.
That is weird.
Why is that a choice? I don't know. So, but Adam and Barbara have decided to have a staycation because they want to fix up this house that they've just bought. This Jane, my God, Jane is what an annoying person to have in your life. Always trying to get you to sell your fucking house. It's none of your business what I want to do with my house. Doesn't matter if it's too big for me. Not your business. Stay out of it.
Yeah. In hindsight, I was trying to figure out if maybe she was, like, already working for the Deetzes.
Oh,
like, okay. If there was some... I don't think it's explicitly stated, but it just kind of occurred to me afterwards that, like... Because I was just like, why would you be coming to people who you know and just being like, hey, you want to sell your house? Like, that's so... I don't know. Maybe that was a thing that happened in the 80s.
Well, she did make a comment about there's been another offer from that investor in New York or something. So maybe it is the Deetzes that keep saying, hey, what about this house? But it seems like Delia does not want this house, so why is she even in on it?
I don't know, maybe she's just it's the 1980s, the man runs the show type situation.
I guess she's just
along for the ride.
Not by the looks of the final product of that house, though.
I mean, yeah, no.
He gets to keep his one room. No, this room is mine. You stay out of here. That's it. That's all he gets. Everything else gets fucked up.
Yeah, it's a bit much. I mean, people always make fun of me when they come over to my house because I have, like, no art on the walls. But maybe I need to find, like, a balance between me and Delia.
Well, yeah, you definitely can't go full Delia. That's for sure.
Get a giant moose antler or whatever the hell that thing was.
Fuck, I don't know what any of them are. So Adam is working on his model, and he decides that he needs to go down to the hardware store to pick up a few things. And on the way home, they're driving across a covered bridge, and they swerve to avoid hitting a dog. I like how, though, we've got Chekhov's dog. I like how they make sure that we see that this dog earlier is crossing dangerously in front of them. At that moment when he stops to wave to some guy in town, I don't know if I'd like to live in a small town and have to be this friendly to everybody. I'm not that nice. Have to roll down my window and, oh, hey. Hi.
You're not about the small town hospitality?
Not about the small town hospitality, no. Not post-COVID. I think that's my problem, is after 2020, it's like, yeah, you know what? I'll just stay in my own little bubble. I'm happier in here.
You're the type of person who misses COVID because then you had the excuse to just be antisocial.
That's right. That's exactly what it is.
I've made
my relationships. Yeah, exactly. I've made my relationships over Zoom, and I get my fill out of that still.
Yeah, it used to be nice to have a built-in excuse to, like, not go out.
Yeah.
That everybody would understand.
Yeah. But meanwhile, I know more people getting COVID now than I did when it was popular.
When it was fashionable.
Yeah, when it was fashionable. Now my dad's busy almost dying of it, and we've got David postponing because of it. Fuck.
Ah, COVID. So passe.
I know. God, you're so last year. So driving home, they avoid hitting the dog, though, and crash through the bridge and plummet to their death. But they don't know that they're dead yet. They end up walking back to their house. Now, they walk back to their house. How come they can never leave the house again? Like, they didn't trudge through the desert, through the sandworms to get there. So why aren't they tied to the river? Why aren't they haunting the river if that's where they die?
Well, I was kind of wondering. I thought about that, too. And do they mention that they walked back from the car? Because I thought maybe they just, like, kind of, like, reappeared on the
door.
On the
threshold.
On the threshold, and were kind of just, like, confused about what happened and why they were there.
Maybe that's what happens, is they just appear. But again, there is still the question of why is the house what they're tied to? Or is that explained in the book?
I'm not sure. I mean, generally, I feel like the only other show I can think of right now is Supernatural when it comes to ghosts. And in the Supernatural lore, ghosts are, like, linked to items. So, like, for Adam specifically, I feel like if you wanted to get rid of his ghost, you would want to salt and burn that
model
town.
Of the town. Okay.
So, like, yeah, I think sometimes, like, the spirits are kind of hooked to some sort of, like, personal artifact. And maybe in this case, it is just the house in general. Like, that house holds some significance to them. I don't know.
No, absolutely. That works for me. I'll take that. Yeah. That's canon now. That's implanted. All right. Yeah. I'm good with that.
Look forward to my book, Colin's Ghost Lore.
Ghost Theories.
Coming to stores in 2024.
Did they explain this in any of those Ghost Hunter shows or anything? Maybe I'm the one that's like hasn't done enough research. Maybe the answer's right there. Some ghost hunter listening to our show being like, fuck, guys, it's this simple. How do you not know this? Everybody fucking knows this.
I mean, I will say that if that were to be what happened, like, you die and you just show up back in your house with no idea about what's happened to you, with just some weird handbook to guide you, like, that'd be really annoying.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I want, like, a Pearly Gates type situation or, like, a Grim Reaper type situation where somebody's going to, like, show up to take
someone
you by the
needs,
hand.
Yeah,
and
exactly. Yeah, someone needs to guide me through this experience. I don't know what's going on. It's, yeah. Or at least leave me like a videotape.
Yeah.
Big old flashing sign that says, watch me, you know, hit play. Something like that. They get back to the house. There's a fire in the fireplace for some reason. And they try to leave the house again. And that's when we find out about the desert and the sandworms. And I discovered, you know, because I've always thought that, oh boy, these special effects don't hold up. I mean, when I watch this again, I'm like, ugh, stop motion does not work anymore compared to what you've seen these days. But then I learned that Tim Burton was just given a very minimal budget for the special effects. So he's like, okay, I'm going to lean into it the other way and make them look extra cheesy.
Yeah, I was going to. There are movies where that type of thing would bother me, but sometimes in movies like this, I find it more inspiring, like, to look and be like, oh, like, I would have never thought of that. Like, specifically, I was thinking of the scene, there's the scene where after they decide to, like, haunt them and scare them, they're like, oh, like, they run to the window, and they're like, oh, watch, they'll be running out to their cars, like, at any moment now. Yeah. And it's so clearly, like, Hot Wheels on a model driveway or something like that. And I was like, and then it just goes back to them looking out the house window, and I was just thinking, I was like, oh yeah, that's kind of cool, like how much of a scene you could set up and make it look realistic with just some lighting and some toys.
That's how you get them driving the Corvette.
Oh yeah.
You don't have to rent a Corvette if you just have a toy car Corvette. Because that's Maxie Dean's car. The old Maxie Dean. So yeah, Adam's been gone for hours after he ends up in the desert. And then we get like the quick TV commercial of Beetlejuice. Is that when it is?
I think so, yeah. The bio exorcist.
Yeah, the bio exorcism. Yeah.
Is it first they try to scare them and they're no get? Like they... She tries to do the hanging in the closet and the rip off the face, and I don't know which one comes first.
Well, I think we just get the little teaser of the commercial coming on for a split second. Okay. And that, I think that's the only thing that... See, because again, my voice detect fails me in my notes. We see a quick shut off. Beetlejuice discovering the Maitland is setting his sights on them. Like, what the fuck?
Oh, no, I remember what you're talking about. That's the scene where... It's a quick... I think you meant to say a quick shot, but it shows Beetlejuice...
Oh, quick shot of... Okay.
Reading the newspaper, and he sees that, like, the Maitlands are, like, the newest arrivals in
the
afterlife.
The POV shot of him sitting in his easy chair going, oh, let's see who we got here. I like Beetlejuice. I like Michael Keaton as Beetlejuice. I look forward to the sequel to see what he brings to Beetlejuice and whether they give him more than 15 minutes of screen time.
Mm-hmm. I would gather that they would.
It's so strange, though, to think of the fact that his next movie was Batman. That is so strange after this movie. How two diametrically opposed characters could you have?
Yeah. I mean, I think that Michael Keaton, the more I learn about him, which has really only been maybe in the last 5 years, like, I didn't even know he was a comedian until I watched this documentary about the Comedy Store, and it, like, it blew my mind that he was a stand-up comic, because I could just never picture him that, like, I've basically only really seen him in Batman. And now I've seen him in, I think we watched Mr. Mom,
yeah.
And now Beetlejuice, but it's like, but even watching him in The Flash, shitty movie, but he is definitely the high point. Like, I just feel like I did not appreciate Michael Keaton enough in my life.
Yeah.
Like, he's an amazingly talented actor.
Yeah. And, I mean, have you seen Birdman?
Yeah, I was going to say, I have seen Birdman. That was that was a great movie.
Yeah. Yeah, he's kind of has this, like, renaissance, this new gray-haired but mostly bald Michael Keaton renaissance. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I also really loved him as the Best Buy manager in The Other Guys.
Yeah.
It's just like a small part he has, but he's so good.
Yeah, and of course, as the Vulture in Spider-Man Homecoming.
Right, right.
Yeah. And Venom 2. So, they realize that they're dead and that they don't think that they have much to worry about anymore. So that's enough foreshadowing to make sure that we get the terrible new tenants of this house moving in. Terrible new owners. The Dietzes.
Mm-hmm. They did like a, what I thought was like a really smart move of, somehow when Adam and Barbara are like, firstly, like they make the door, I think, and they're going through all this stuff. And then it's like they come back and they realize that they've been gone for 3 months to like advance the story. Like, I thought that was a really cool way to just like get time moving so that it's to get like the actual story of the Dietzes and stuff on the roll.
Yeah. And, you know, you say you love Catherine O'Hara. I do like the choice that she makes to lick Jeffrey Jones's nose. It's just, it's this one little moment that she, you know, it's such a bizarre choice, but I'm there for it.
Nice. I didn't even notice that.
Yeah, and we get to, of course, meet Ortho, too, who is going through the house spray painting what he's going to be changing in the house. There's a funny moment that I saw that is when Jeffrey Jones is sitting in his office and he's reading a magazine and he's got his feet up on the desk and all the insert cards are falling out of the magazine into his lap. And there's just like way too many. There's way more than this magazine should have. And it's like, that is such like a National Lampoon type joke, but I'm surprised that it's in this movie. But I still loved it. I thought it was hilarious. It's subtle enough, I guess.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, the kid of this family has to be some sort of dark, brooding teenager. I mean, that works perfectly. And so we got Lydia, and she's going around taking pictures, you know, all moody and artistic and everything like that. But you know what kind of camera she's taking those pictures with?
Nikon.
It is! It was a Nikon camera, and let me tell you about more things in Sponsorship Corner. So, always on the lookout for product placements and movies. This week, Beetlejuice is brought to you by Volvo Cars, Nikon and Polaroid Cameras, Minute Maid Orange Juice, Lipton Tea, North American Van Lines, once again Coca-Cola, always Coca-Cola. I can't believe how many times Coke has been a sponsor on the show. Practical Homeowner Magazine and Zagnut Candy Bar. And I guess Beetlejuice's bioexorcism services would be one.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, there we go.
We throw in the fake ones too.
That's right. And this has been Sponsorship Corner.
I forgot to mention when Adam and Barbara like first go into the after like the little office there.
Yeah.
And they meet that reception girl. I was really caught off guard by that suicide kind. It's just like thrown off as like a little gag. Like she's just like, oh, like I can't remember what her line is.
Yeah, but she holds out her wrists.
She says like, oh, I've had like I always hope to have like another happy day or something, and like throws out her like slit wrist, and I was just like, wow, I do not think that would be you just don't see stuff like that anymore.
Yeah, it's kind of bleak realizing that in this version of the afterlife, you have to live with how you died. But it is also interesting that in this version of the afterlife, everyone has some sort of shocking way that they've died. You don't see just a lot of little old ladies running around. I mean, everyone's got like a chicken bone stuck in their throat or a bite taken out of them from a shark or run over by, you know, the flat guy that has to go sideways through the wall. Like,
wouldn't you think
where are the heart attacks?
Would you think that Adam and Barbara should have just been condemned to be wet forever?
Oh, yeah. They should have been.
That'd be annoying. That'd be enough to make you a poltergeist.
Yeah. But no, it seems like they could, like, they can blow dry and everything like that. I mean, he's stylish later on. They've got some do's happening.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Or do you have to go through the orientation program first? And why do they get rushed through? I mean, other than because story. But why do they get rushed through and all these other people in the waiting room still have to wait with their numbers?
Yeah, I don't know.
Did they pay something on Earth to, like, get VIP treatment in the afterlife or something? That they... Adam sold his soul to the devil somewhere?
Maybe their, like, agent or whatever, their case manager is... She's got more pull.
Yeah. Maybe. So when they get out of the afterlife, the Dietzes are full moved in at this point. This is when the art is getting moved in, and I love the line... This is my art and it's dangerous. Do you think I want to die like this? Oh, that was a good line. When she almost gets crushed by the whatever the fuck that is.
Yeah. I think it was an antler of some kind.
Yeah. Maybe. It's a feather. That's the irony of it.
Maybe. I didn't understand why does Ortho come through the window when he shows up?
I'm not sure. I think it's just mostly to show that Ortho is an unusual, quirky fellow. You know, he's probably got some weird-ass superstition that involves crossing the threshold of a door. Maybe it's because he's a vampire. Maybe he's a vampire and he can't cross the doorway. He wasn't properly invited in, but he found a loophole.
Yeah. And is Lydia... Is there a step-parent? Is Delia her stepmom?
Think so.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the impression that I get.
Okay. I couldn't remember, but then I couldn't remember if it was actually established in the movie, but I had listened to a little bit of an interview with Catherine O'Hara about it, and she referred to herself as, like, the evil stepmother.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, yeah, because she does call her Delia. I don't think right, she... Yeah. Yeah. Well, the ghosts, though, our heroes, Adam and Barbara, they do end up getting spotted by Lydia.
Mm-hmm.
She ends up with the key to the attic, and she ends up, I think this is where they try haunting with the sheets. Is this where, I don't know, we're all mixed up. As I'm going down in my notes, I'm realizing, oh, wait, no, they haven't gone to the afterlife yet.
Yeah, no, yeah, you're right, I was ahead on that, because it's, yeah, they try the haunting where they can't see them, where, like, Adam beheads himself, and...
Right.
And then I think Lydia sees them in the window. And then
she gets the key to the attic, and then they end up drawing the door into the afterlife, and she sees that's when we get our commercial for Beetlejuice.
Yeah. And then they go to the afterlife, and then they come back, try the sheet thing. That doesn't work, and then they call Beetlejuice, I think.
That's right. I also, you know, because I wasn't that far in my notes when I was looking at them, yeah, I also missed with Juno, the caseworker, how I love the touch of the smoke coming out of the gash in her neck.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good.
It's such a simple gag, but I love it.
I was going to say, like, there is so much room for a spinoff of this movie of just, like, to have a TV show set in this, like, afterlife bureau, like, caseworker, whatever, where it just,
yeah,
like, helping people, you know, I don't even know it, but yeah, like, helping people adjust to being dead or something like that.
Would you make it a like a mockumentary style, like Parks and Rec or The Office? Would you do that kind of thing? You know, talking heads and all that sort of shit? Or
yeah, I think that would be pretty funny.
Yeah?
That'd be good. Like, even with Beetlejuice 2, like, I know it's going to be, like, they're striking while the iron is hot on Jenna Ortega, and she's going to be Lydia's daughter, from what I hear.
That seems to be the idea, I think, yeah.
But I really think, like, I really hope that more of it takes place in, similar to the TV show, like, in the afterlife.
Yeah.
Like, in the other realms and other worlds and that kind of stuff, like, not just fixed to the house and stuff happening in the house.
Yeah. No, and you know that they could do more with it now. Like, that's kind of the other thing about it. Yeah. So, yeah, this is the point where they get back and they try haunting the Dietzes with the sheets, and the moaning bit with Lydia is still pretty funny when she thinks that they're having sex.
Having sex.
Yeah, and then the other one where they're trying to haunt Delia, and she thinks it's the TV, where she sits bolt upright and turns off the TV. That one was another good one. So, but when their haunting attempts aren't working, they end up trying Beetlejuice, and they end up inside Adam's model. Did you know, you're a community watcher, right?
I mean, up until it got terrible, like circa season 4.
Okay. Well, did you know that they have a multi-year joke on their show involving Beetlejuice?
I didn't know it involved Beetlejuice, but I know that there's, like, if you look in the back, there's like a separate thing happening in the background throughout the entire series that, like, is its own story that you can find or you can
see. Okay. Well, no, in the first 3 seasons of the show, they say the word Beetlejuice once a season. And in the 3rd season mention, someone in a Beetlejuice Halloween costume walks by in the background. The 3rd time say Beetlejuice, yeah.
Well, fuck, now I gotta go watch Community again. Jesus.
Oh, man. I don't know which episodes, but yeah, I did not know that, and I'm like, that's amazing.
Thankfully, it's in the first 3 seasons, because...
Well,
that show got so bad after a while.
That's why when you said season 4, I'm glad that, okay, good. I don't know, I was still there for all the seasons of Community myself.
Yeah, no, they lost me, whatever the season was where, like, Dan Harmon got canceled.
Yeah.
And I think, to go off on a Community tangent here.
Okay.
The reason that show kind of lost me... It's part of the show, like, all the people who are on it talk about how, like, they never knew if they were gonna get a new season until, like, the 11th hour.
Yeah.
But it's like, you could tell. So, like, once, like, people got more popular, like when Donald Glover got more popular, and then he couldn't be there, like, as part of the main group the whole time, then all that stuff with Chevy Chase got weird.
Yeah.
And like, they started to, like, push him to the side. It was just like things just got weird with that show after a while.
No, that's true. The especially the last season is really rough, but I don't know. I liked some of the weirdness up until then. And I mean, you still always get, like, a paintball episode or something every year anyway, right? You know. You got to at least those in the later seasons.
I do always laugh because I think the first season of Community came out at the same time as the show The Cape, and that's where the, like, 6 seasons in a movie thing comes from. And I remember, like, I was watching The Cape at the time as well, and that show was so terrible, and obviously I don't even think it got a full season before it got canceled. But it's such a like weird time capsule for how it used stuff that was occurring in the present. And it's funny because now you can watch Community and there'll always be these weird things, and you're like, oh yeah, that was a thing. Like, I totally forgot about that.
So, Beetlejuice.
Back to Beetlejuice.
So they meet Beetlejuice, right? Is that that's where we were, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, they have to dig him up. Yeah, the introduction of Beetlejuice is unusual to me because it's like they decide that they're going to use Beetlejuice. They go down there, they dig him up, and then they're like, you know what? No, fuck this. We've changed our mind. Like, they immediately changed their mind on Beetlejuice.
Yeah.
Right?
But they still had to say his name or whatever.
Yeah.
Don't they? Yeah.
Yeah, or home, home, home is what she says, because they decide that they can do it themselves, and that's when we get the possession scene with Deo, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm not flying through this way too fast, am I? Like,
No. It's only a 90 minute movie.
Like, yeah, I'm sitting here thinking, like, you know, it was a long time before I talked about them actually talking to Beetlejuice, but it's like, no, wait, that's like half an hour into the movie. I realized that, wait, no, a lot of movie has happened before yeah, they even talked to Beetlejuice for the first time.
Yeah, I was gonna say it's probably more like an app, like, because I remember I had to stop the movie shortly after they met, like shortly after the first part with Beetle, where they're done with Beetlejuice and they lock him back in the model, and yeah, that was like at an hour. So they really probably don't even get Beetlejuice involved until like the 45 to 50 minute mark.
Yeah, because I'm seeing this now. Like, they have talked to Beetlejuice, and then they try to do it themselves instead, because we get our Deo possession scene.
Yeah.
But, like, I didn't think the dinner party was happening this late in the movie, but I guess it is, or this early in the movie, whatever. Where, like, anyway, but they're...
Oh, wait.
Oh, yeah, they're convinced everyone is going to run out screaming, oh, this isn't the dinner, yeah.
So it's Barbara and... don't Barbara and Adam possess them for the Deo, because that's, like, their song? And then they're like, oh, they're all going to run out, and then they don't, and then it's like... They all want, it's like Barbara, I keep messing with the Dietzes. They're like, they like it. Like, they want this to be like part of the fun of their house, and they want Barbara and Adam to like come out more. And it's that point when it doesn't fit, it fails. Then they decide now they need to get Beetlejuice.
They
get Beetlejuice, and then he comes and he does that whole thing where he like turns into a snake and like, and scares them all. And
see, my problem was I forgot that there were two different points in this movie where they had this guy over. Well, because the first time the guy's just over touring the house, and then they're like, yeah, we got to get whatever his name is, Robert Goulet out here. We got to get him, Maxie Dean. We got to get him out for a dinner party. So I forgot that there's two different scenes involving this one guy. So yes, they do the Deo thing first. But yeah, that's when they get Beetlejuice and they get his help instead, but Ortho manages to get the book. He manages to sneak the book because Lydia, you know, comes to invite them down. They're embarrassed, but Ortho finds the book. But they turn to Beetlejuice to scare them, and he does as a large stop-motion snake.
Yeah. That, I don't know. It didn't hold up as well as I would like, but it was still fun.
Well, and knowing that Tim Burton was going for cheap maybe makes it more forgivable. I don't know. Looking at it with that lens.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
It's a little Jason and the Argonauts, you know.
There's also the whole running thing I feel like we should mention where, like, the Maitland's case manager is like adamant that they need to be the ones to scare the Dietzes out of the house.
Yeah.
And so after they banish Beetlejuice to the model house, they go back and then they do that. They have what I thought was like a cool, this is one where I was like, it still kind of looks funky by today's standards, but when they go there and they get their new scary faces
to show Juno what they've got. Yeah.
Yeah, Adam has that, like, weird long-nosed, I don't know, rooster thing going on, and Barbara has the alligator mouth with the eyeballs inside and whatnot.
Long tongue, yeah. Yeah, it is janky, but then, like, the overall effect, though, the makeup once it's done, the mask is incredible once it's done. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Juno basically just summons them to yell at them.
Yeah.
She's like, fuck you guys, you're not doing it. Get out there and do your shit. What's wrong with you?
And then she gets pissed off about them losing the handbook. And this handbook, if I had one problem with this movie, I think the handbook is my problem.
Yeah.
It's never really explained, like, why it's so important. Like, it appears to be, like, very, very important. And, like, obviously Ortho can use it later to try to cast spells and stuff. But I don't know. I feel like there should have been more along the way of, like, establishing the gravity of the handbook.
Is it something to do with man should not know for certainty the existence of an afterlife? It could bring society crumbling down. You know, it's like the Santa logic in most Santa movies where it's like, no, they can't see me. They have to believe in me.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I guess, like, the way it ends up being used is essentially to try and, like, control them. Yeah. So maybe that's something. There's something to that, too.
Yeah. Well, so Lydia, after writing a suicide note, that's... Okay, 1988.
That was a little weird.
she goes to see Adam and Barbara. Yeah, she is definitely... She's probably a cutter. They just don't show that scene. Or is she just like, is she like overly dramatic? Is she actually depressed, or is she like, no, woe is me?
Well, I don't know. The way that she's writing the letter, like, she keeps like correcting her own grammar and stuff, like, makes me think that it is more of a, like, less of like a real, I'm going to do this, and maybe
cry
more
for
of
help.
A, like, cry for help, like, emotional teenager type thing.
She does not like her stepmom. That's all it comes down to. She's not happy. She had to leave all her friends back in New York. But when she goes to see Adam and Barbara, she meets Beetlejuice. I like the charades that he has to play to get her to say Beetlejuice. Look behind, like when he's nodding his head, you know, look behind you, you know, audio format. This is that really works for the audio format. But yeah, the look behind you, and there's a beetle. Hey, how's it going? This would be another place that I could have launched into sponsorship corner is the very blatant Minute Maid orange juice pouring beside her, floating in midair.
Yeah. That would have been a little on the nose, though.
Yeah. But Adam and Barbara, with their twisted-up faces, get back just in time to stop Lydia saying it a third time. Thank goodness. But there's going to be an investment banquet. Okay, so the plan is to buy the town and turn it into a carnival? Is that, like, is this an amusement park? He wants to turn the whole town into an amusement park? Is that what's going on? With possessions and hauntings as, like, its central theme?
Yeah, it could be, like, a giant-sized Fort Edmonton Park After Dark.
Okay. Like, I don't quite understand the overall investment that is happening with this town.
Yeah, to me, that's one of those things that we're probably just going to have to chalk up as because the story says so.
Because
like,
plot.
Because a wizard did it. I mean, like, logistically, like, say it's a town of, like, 300 property owners even. It would take so much money to pay everybody off to buy their properties when they have no real reason to. Or are you just gonna, like, incentivize everybody to, like, I don't know, go along with it?
Mm-hmm.
To just, you know, be Halloween Town 24/7?
Right? Like, it's I don't know. We'd force those people out of town would be my thought. There's got to be some sort of posse logic in a small town like that. That old man that was sitting on the porch in front of the barber shop, he don't take no shit from nobody. You know, he doesn't.
Yeah. I mean, it would be they could just cycle through the seasons. They could do like they could go immediately from Halloween to then they could become like a Christmas village.
That's right.
I don't know.
Yeah. And the whole theme could be Nightmare Before Christmas because that works for that whole end of the year.
Yeah.
That's right. Nightmare Before Christmas is part of the Beetlejuice universe.
I'd pay to see that crossover.
Yeah? Okay, so we established in the waiting room that everybody died from some sort of freak accident because you can see their crazy-ass makeup. How did Beetlejuice die? Is he the one heart attack that happened? Because there don't seem to be any marks on him. Or is he like a proper dead body? Like, or is he some sort of demon? Like,
yeah, I kind of got the sense that he was like a demon of some sort.
Okay.
I think just because he can be summoned.
Yeah.
Makes me think like he's something different than just a ghost or a spirit.
Well, is he a poltergeist then? Is that what he is? Maybe? Because he can possess? Is that what a poltergeist does?
Well, again, to go back into my ghost lore knowledge, poltergeists are generally like angry spirits. They're like the violent ones, like the ones that'll like cut you in your sleep or like throw things and break glass and that kind of stuff.
Well, when he turns into that snake, I mean, he's got death in his eyes.
Yeah.
That seems like a deadly poltergeist.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, I just didn't know whether he was a formerly dead. Maybe he sold his soul as a human for some sort of afterlife privileges. But he's cursed like a genie. Someone has to say his name. Is he somehow related to Candyman? Like, both of them have to be summoned by saying their name three times.
But I mean, he calls himself the ghost with the most. So that makes me think he's a ghost, but Google generally thinks he's a demon.
Oh, okay. Huh. Well, at the investment banquet, Ortho starts doing a spell from the book and starts bringing Adam and Barbara to life. And they start aging it rapidly. They're in their old marriage clothes. And so Lydia has to go to Beetlejuice for help. He needs to get married to stay out for good. So there is also some sort of law to the how it works. Or is that all a scam? Is he scamming Lydia to marry him? Or is it just, or is that actually like, no, I like it. To become full-time, he has to get married.
I don't know. Based on my Wikipedia research, it seems to be more along the lines of, like, he needs to marry her so that he can do what he wants in the real world. So, like, it's not a scam. It's, like, it's more out of, like, a personal necessity.
Yeah, it is real. Okay. So, yeah, we get the whole makeover of the living room and more fun stop motion animation. And we have all the statues coming to life and they're trying to stop Beetlejuice because he is keeping his end of the promise no matter what. He's bringing them back. He's turning them younger again when he comes through. I'm wondering in the new movie whether they'll continue with the stop motion animation or whether they'll go like full CGI now that they can.
Well, I don't know if you heard, but Tim Burton was pretty pissed off at what the Flash did to his Superman and Batman with CGI. So I don't know. He doesn't seem to have a good
relationship with CGI.
So, yeah. Like, what's Tim Burton's most recent movie?
Alice in Wonderland. No, that's old at this point.
Yeah, I'm trying to think.
Is he doing the Wonka? The Timothy Chalamet Wonka?
Oh, yeah. Maybe?
Because, I mean, Wonka is clearly digital.
Oh, he did Wednesday. I'm an idiot.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't look like he's doing Wonka.
what I can see.
But even Charlie and the Chocolate Factory definitely had a lot of digital in it. All the Oompa Loompa shit and squirrels and whatnot.
It looks like Wednesday was the most recent thing that he directed, and that still had like a lot of practical effects.
Yeah.
Like even with like Thing or whatever, the hand, they used a real person.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, if I had to guess, I would guess they're probably going to... Like, I'm sure it'll be one of those things where he'll have a lot more money, so I'm sure things where, like, CGI could be used to clean it up.
Yeah.
He'll use it, but I feel like he's the type of guy who will, like, use it in small doses.
Yeah.
It's like he'll use it, but he doesn't want you to be able to see it.
Yeah.
Very clearly.
Well, yeah, because otherwise, his movies get a weird sheen on them. Like, it's kind of like Zack Snyder, where he gets this weird filter on them, because that's when you get a movie like Big Fish, or you mm-hmm. get a movie like Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, where it's everything's kind of blurry.
Yeah, you can tell that everything was filmed in a big green room.
Yeah, and then a filter was applied over all the edges to make them blend in together.
Yeah.
In the end, they end up managing to get Beetlejuice because he banishes Barbara to the desert, but then she rides a fucking sand snake in through the roof of the house.
She's from the House of Atreides. That's a Dune reference for anybody who doesn't know.
Nice. Anytime we're in the sandscape, do we ever see the house?
No, it like opens just from a door. It's like door just opens.
Door opening in like the sky. So how does she crash it through the roof? Like at best, she'd be able to crash it through the doorway.
Well, there's only one logical answer. A wizard did it.
A wizard did it. A wizard genie in the desert. Yeah.
I was just reminded that I think a big reason why I never watched this movie was because in that scene when Barbara and Adam get summoned in their like wedding gown and they start decomposing.
Yeah.
I remember watching that when I was really young, and it scared the shit out of me. And so I think I had an aversion to this movie for a while because of that.
I could see that, yeah. I mean, they go to hold hands, and they just start turning to dust.
Yeah. It's the same thing as, like, Willow when all the people start turning into pigs at the end.
Yeah.
Like, just scared the shit out of me.
Yeah. There is enough humor in this movie to offset a lot of that, but some of the stuff that is scary is really scary, especially when you're younger. And, you know, even the snake banister was one of those things.
You know? Like Beetlejuice is the prime example of a movie where it's like context is important. Like you have to watch it all the way through so that you know what the general tone is. It's kind of like, you know, how people made... like that trailer of The Shining, but it's like a happy, like go lucky family comedy, and it really works, like it just because of the scenes that they showed and the music that they play underneath, it just works somehow. And I feel like Beetlejuice is that you could do the opposite, like you could make it seem like a absolute gory horror, like scariest movie you'll ever see in your life if you just take certain scenes and like change the music from the like high tempo piano to, you know, at a like darker tone chords, like
I mean, you brought up the idea of the afterlife earlier. I mean, the afterlife is funny stuff in this movie. You know, the football team that doesn't realize they're dead yet and keeps calling Juno coach, or, you know, or the stuff that's going on in the waiting room, things like that. There's funny stuff happening there.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'm not seeing the darkness in a woman sawn in half sitting on a couch. You know, maybe I should actually check myself, and I should be more revolted about how I don't see the darkness in that person.
Yeah.
But we get the end of the movie where Lydia is now a happy-go-lucky student in the small town, and she's getting an A on her math test, and so she gets to do a Harry Belafonte dance. And we get Delia's new art, which is the head, the snake head.
It seems like they're doing some weird, like, co-parenting situation. It's like, yeah. Like it's almost like Charles...
With between the ghost and, like, yeah.
Yeah, like, it almost seemed to me like Charles and Delia, they have no real interest in being parents.
Yeah.
So, like, now Barbara and Adam are there to kind of fill the void.
They get to be the parents that they weren't able to be in real life.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. I see that. And then, yeah, Charles and Delia. So they're like living nannies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, is kind of the best relationship you could hope for with a ghost.
I suppose so. I should have looked up the whole cast list for the new one, but is it just Michael Keaton, Winona Ryder coming back? Or is there going to be any Catherine O'Hara or... Alec Baldwin, Gina Davis, like...
I wonder, I mean, they're all...
Like, is it a case of Beetlejuice has moved on to a new home?
The cast, from what I can see on IMDb, it's Jenna Ortega is playing Lydia's daughter, Monica Bellucci is playing Beetlejuice's wife.
Interesting. Willem
Dafoe is going to be in it.
Oh,
Catherine O'Hara... Catherine O'Hara is back as
nice.
Delia Dietz. Winona Ryder is back. Justin Theroux, his character isn't named. Yeah, those are the only ones I recognize.
Nice. Okay, well, that's good to hear. I didn't think Jeffrey Jones would be on that list. I believe he's still disgraced. I don't know. I don't know if he's still canceled. Now, out of everything in this movie, though, like... When we talk about the special effects and everything like that, I put a lot of... I get it now. I get what Tim Burton was going for the cheap special effects. Except for the one at the end, when Beetlejuice's head shrinks. That's the only one that I can't get behind.
Why, you didn't like it?
Yeah, it's very cheap and green screen looking as his head is shrinking. Hey, what's going on? I don't know, it's just...
I didn't mind it. I mean, I like that whole scene, like, the fact that, like, the head-shrinking guy is there.
Changing the number.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. That's the poster I've seen, is it's him with the really long number, and it goes, "I'm next," is the tagline for it. Yeah, everyone's happy, everyone's co-parenting... Beetlejuice has a small head, and there we go. That is Beetlejuice. So, Colin, on IMDb, it scored a 7.5 out of 10 and has a Metascore of 70. On Rotten Tomatoes, it has 86% on the tomato meter and an audience rating of 82%. Those are all pretty high numbers. I mean, that's some of the most solid ratings we've seen in a while. But, Colin, those are just numbers... Like a sandworm eating your Beetlejuice, hit us with some reviews. I don't know.
All right. Vominos gives the movie 3 out of 5 stars and says, Winona Ryder, thumbs up. Underage marriage, thumbs down.
Oh, I never even thought of that.
John W. gives the movie 5 out of 5 stars and says, Beetlejuice is one of Tim Burton's best films and is definitely an all-time classic. A brilliant, manic performance by Michael Keaton. He's creepy, funny, thoroughly entertaining, and just owns the screen every time he's in a scene. I laugh every time when Keaton screams, "Nice effing model," and then proceeds to grab his crotch, LOL. This is probably Burton's most absurd, outlandish, creative movie. Just overflowing with so many ideas. I love the premise and how they handle life after death. It's so morbid yet funny. Beetlejuice is totally bizarre, but that is what makes this movie so fascinating.
That review brought up a point that I forgot to mention that I found interesting. The kicking over of the tree and him screaming, "Nice fucking model." This is one of the only movies in a PG-13 era, because this was around the time that they were still figuring out PG-13, that was allowed to be rated PG but have the word fuck in it like that. Hmm. Yeah, and so... But that scene itself is actually a blooper.
Oh.
Because he kicked the tree and it wasn't supposed to fall over. And he just improvised nice fucking model and grabbed his crotch. And they're like, no, that was too funny. That's the take we're leaving in. So nice. At least he kicked it over and went with it.
Matt P says 1 out of 5 stars. Was looking for a Halloween movie and was like, oh, Beetlejuice, I've never seen that. This movie does not live up to its reputation slash hype. This movie was lacking in all aspects. I kept waiting for it to turn a corner and get better, but it never did. Sad face. If you're a fan of bad acting and horrible cheap costumes and sets, this might be a movie for you. But if you aren't into wasting an hour and a half on something that feels like it's a made-for-TV movie from the 1980s with a budget of $785 written on a bar napkin and had no real plot, then I'd suggest skipping this so-called quote-unquote classic.
Wow. Wow, that's a little cold. I mean, you didn't have to go that mean with it.
Jithin K says 3.5 out of 5. Juxtaposing sweetness and creepiness together to make a bizarre movie is kind of the Tim Burton brand by now, but this seems to be a version of him that is not fully realized and perfected for that, but still enjoyable. Keaton is the real horror here, even when mostly disguised as a perverted Joker. Can't believe how utterly horrific the original script was compared to this. I can't see Hollywood producing that without making it sleazy and exploitative instead of actually exploring any themes deeply. Glad it turned out to be this instead and in the hands of Burton, even if it still could have been a bit more polished with respect to writing.
What was the original version?
I don't know. I had read that, like, there was a version of this movie that was going to be, like, much more violent and more, like, leaning a little bit more to the demonic tropes of Beetlejuice.
That would have been the Wes Craven version, I guess.
Yeah. Okay, last one. 5 out of 5 stars from Eliza. Even something horrible deserves some type of credit for stirring intriguing captivation from its audacity. I think she meant to say audience. Autocorrect got the better for. yet this could not even muster a flicker of even that. Nothing was moving anywhere within my body or soul from watching this. I have not a single word to say to describe it because it does not deserve an adjective in any positive or negative way. I'm still giving it 5 stars for how impressed I was by how it pulled off having so much going on, yet nothing of meaning at the same time. Wow. All right.
Right on. So, yeah, pretty good scores. 70, 75, 86, 82. Where does this fall for you, Colin? I mean, it's now that you've seen it all the way through, beginning to end, I mean, that should be the part to remind you of is that, hey, this is kind of technically a first viewing for you.
Yeah, I would say that overall, I thought it was an enjoyable movie, but there's not enough Beetlejuice.
Yeah, true.
There's not even really enough Lydia, who like in the cartoon is the main protagonist.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, I just find Barbara and Adam like very uninteresting. Like, their whole shtick about how they're, like, bad ghosts, it's like they can't, the story never can really decide, like, what their deal is. Like, why do they matter? Like, what do they even want? Why do they want people out of their house? Like, what were their hopes and dreams when they died that have been dashed? Like, I just don't even know, like, what they're working towards other than, like, trying to get the Dietzes out of their house, but, like, that's not enough. Like, shouldn't they have been working towards, I don't know, moving on to, like, something else? Or, like I don't... Kind of like, I guess, like, the Casper thing of, like, going, like, maybe they have, like, do they have unfinished business of some sort. that they need to deal with? Like, it was just all very unclear and maybe just, like, not fleshed out at all.
Yeah.
For the entire story to just be like basically a ghost family wants a human family out of their house just because, which is what it kind of boils down to, and so they get this like demon who's like with a bad streak and like is kind of out of control to come do it, but then he's not even really there for very long. He really only gets like one crack at it. It just, I don't know. I just wanted more.
I wonder though if the point is of Barbara and Adam to be so milquetoast, right? For yeah. everything, they're the straight men in this movie, right? Like you've got the wildness of the Dietzes, you've got this wacky poltergeist ghost demon guy, you've got all this strangeness of the afterworld. You need them to play the straight guy.
Yeah, I guess it's just strange because, like...
Because it's Alec Baldwin?
Well, no, it's just in this... There's just something about this story that didn't work for me. It's like, I felt like they weren't ever really, like, at true odds. Like, the Dietzes didn't even really seem to care about them. Like, yeah. They never really... They just kind of, like, thought it was a cool thing. And then they, like, are bad ghosts who, like, want them out of their house, but, like... They don't really even put much effort into being... Like, I'm trying to think of, like, a movie, like... This is kind of like, you know that movie, like, Neighbors with Seth Rogen, where it's, like, somebody moves onto their block, and then yeah. it's, like, we're battling, and it should have been, like, an upsmanship of, like, let's have them, like, really go head-to-head.
Yeah.
And, like, maybe they have, like, even the whole undertone of, like... I don't know. I guess I always do this, but I'll say what I would have done is yeah. I would have had it really actually be a more like butting heads between the Maitlands and the Dietzes, and have instead of them going to Beetlejuice to try to get them out, go to Beetlejuice to try to learn how to become better ghosts. And Beetlejuice will do this, but under the guise he's like slowly seducing Lydia. To eventually, to reach his ultimate goal of, like, marrying her or, like, getting her to say his name so that he can marry her and, like, go yeah. on and do all this thing. And then he emerges as, like, this big bad at the end where yeah. it's, like, right now this movie is just kind of just, like, it's just a bunch of stuff thrown at the wall, but nothing is really sticking to me. That would be my best way to sum it up.
Okay.
So I would give it, like, if I had to give it a percentage, I'd give it, like, a 6 out of 10.
Okay. You make a lot of valid points. I don't know if I can be as mean to Beetlejuice, but you do make some very valid points. It's not exactly the strongest storytelling in this movie.
Yeah,
there's definitely some shortcomings, and I see places that could have had things added to it that might have made it better, and things taken away from it that might have been better. And you bring up a few good ones where I guess what is missing from this Beetlejuice movie is Beetlejuice, and I like the idea that you're right. The cartoon is more fun. It would be more interesting to see it more like the cartoon where it's Beetlejuice taking you on the adventures. But then do we end up in Little Monsters territory or Drop Dead Fred territory or...
Yeah, I was gonna say this movie to me is very reminiscent of Drop Dead Fred, but obviously I'm a Drop Dead Fred loyalist, as is yeah. Brazil.
Yeah.
But it does remind me a lot of that. I just...
As is Brazil, I forgot about that.
I would have liked to see Beetlejuice introduced, I guess, earlier, like, in the actual house, and had it... I wish the movie, again, similar to the cartoon, was more... from Lydia's point of view. It's shocking to me as somebody who grew up on the cartoon that in this movie Lydia is kind of just like a supporting like add-on character and not like the main kind of driver.
I now suddenly don't even remember. Are Adam and Barbara even in the cartoon?
I don't think so, no.
Delia and Charles are, right?
Yeah, but I think it's like more offhand. Like it's more like I know Lydia has parents in the movie, but it's really the Lydia and Beetlejuice show.
Yeah, they're like the nanny and Muppet Babies. They show up in the beginning and the end, but other than that,
yeah,
it's, but yeah, okay. Or the parents and Fairly Odd Parents. That might be a better eye.
Yeah.
One of those shows where the parents disappear for most of the episode. But yeah, I don't remember Adam and Barbara from the cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Beetlejuice, yes, you've turned me slightly on it where I get it. I get what you're saying, and I can see how there were some misses on Beetlejuice. I still like the charm of Beetlejuice, and I still like the character of Beetlejuice, and I still like the stuff that it brought to my world. To see the variety that Michael Keaton is able to give when you can have a performance like this, and then you can have a performance like Batman, and you can have a performance like Mr. Mom, and all these different movies that we've seen and that I have seen in my life. Beetlejuice is one of those ones that is a standout performance for Michael Keaton, even if it's only 15 minutes worth of the movie. So,
yeah, but I mean, to its credit, I would say that, like, I'm being unnecessarily harsh. This movie is not the type of movie that deserves harsh criticism, but I think it's like my wife was telling me that she, like, this is for her, this is like one of those like background movies.
Yeah,
like one of those movies that you could just put on and just like kind of enjoy and like not think about too much. And so I think as that type of movie, yeah, it serves its purpose perfectly. It's not high art by any means, but like it's a fun ride.
Yeah.
It's just like, one of those movies when you look closer at it, all of a sudden, like, you know, the holes start appearing.
True. Yeah. Like, how does a sandworm come through a roof if you don't know where the house is? I look at the fact that I could get behind that 75%, that 7.5 out of 10 from IMDb.
Mm-hmm.
But I can also get behind your 60%.
Mm-hmm.
I think it depends on my mood. And Beetlejuice is one of these movies that I always have to be in a specific mood for. So it's just every once in a while I crave watching something like Beetlejuice, but, you know, it's not often.
I was meaning to ask, have you watched or listened to the Beetlejuice musical?
No, I have not. But I have seen, like, the Beetlejuice music show at Universal Studios, which is not the same thing. Yeah. It's like the Beetlejuice rock and roll show at Universal Studios. Definitely not the same thing. But no, I do not know any of the music from the musical.
I voted for it to be a part of, like, the Broadway Across Canada tour next year, but they didn't go for it.
Yeah, is it a good one?
I mean, there's a few songs that I've liked on the soundtrack. I haven't, like, I don't know what it looks like. I've seen, like, a few videos of, like, random performances on the, but overall, I don't know what the whole show looks like. But the music, I like the music a lot.
Yeah. Maybe I'll download some songs. Give her a listen.
Give her a whirl.
Give her a whirl. It's showtime.
Yeah.
One of the songs must be named as Showtime, right?
I don't even remember.
How is that not one of the taglines?
I was just, like, I didn't pay any mind, but I wonder, do they include any, let's see. Oh, the one that I've listened, oh, they do have Deo.
Oh, any Harry Belafonte.
There is no Showtime. What a miss.
It's got to end, though, with the same song, right?
Yeah, it ends with the jump in the line.
Yeah. Okay. Good. They did it right.
You can rest easy, Sean. It's okay.
Well, there we go. That is Beetlejuice, and that's our show for this week. I've said it more than 3 times in this episode, and he hasn't appeared yet, so...
Fake news. Top, so.
Fake news. Yeah. If you like that show, one thing you could do, just tell people, share our posts, like and subscribe so that you don't miss an episode, or go over to whatever app you listen to your podcast on, give us some stars and a review. Just help drive us up some charts, help us get noticed. Or if you want to spend some money on us, go over to patreon.com/IUsedToLikeThisOne. You become an executive producer of the show and get a shout out, just like executive producer Joshua Blum of the 13th Hour Podcast.
But as always, you can also drop us a line at IUsedToLikeThisOne@gmail.com and let us know what movies you used to like. Let us know what you think of the show. Let us know how it's going, what you think of us. If you have feedback, comments, criticisms, any concerns, maybe all this Beetlejuice talk that we've been saying somehow. Like, what happens if, like, somebody's listening to this out loud in their house and they hear us say Beetlejuice 3 times? Could that potentially, like, spawn Beetlejuice in their own home?
Could we have manifested him in someone else's place?
Well,
maybe. Where does he hang out? Like, is he always hanging out on that table, or does he have other hangouts?
Yeah, I don't know. Well, if that happened, then we're sorry, but, you know, yeah. Watch the movie and then you'll figure out how to get rid of him.
Yes.
I think that's all. That's all I got to say. There we go. Onward and upward.
Yeah. And music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his post, or look for his band, Carter and the Capitals, anywhere you listen to music. Thank you for listening. I guess we got no outgoing thing to say, because this is like one of those in case we got to slip it in episodes. Yeah,
we don't know what's happening, so...
Yeah.
Stay tuned, Bat Friends. Same Bat Time, same Bat Friday channel. You know, wherever you get your pods. IUsedToLikeThisOne.com.
I'm Sean Wells.
I'm Colin Stewart.
Thank you for listening, and join us next time when we take a look at another movie on I Used to Like This One. Always on the... So, full disclosure. I took my notes on this movie, and then I took my notebook to work, and then I lost my notebook on the bus. I left it on the bus, and it didn't get turned in, and so I've lost my notebook, and I hadn't transferred my sponsorship corner notes, so I had to Google these today. So I don't think I have as many as I'm supposed to have, but whatever.